And right now we're joined by Robert Benson, and he's with the NTSB, and that's the National Transportation Safety Board, and you're a senior air safety investigator.
That's correct.
What do you do as a senior air safety investigator?
Well, I've been doing it quite a while, I'm afraid, for the government since about 1984. And what I do is lead one of our teams that go out on the major accidents, usually the ones involving a large loss of life or an airliner goes awry, and then our teams are sent out, and I lead one of those teams.
Oh, so you're on the GO teams, as they call them,
yes,
for the major accidents investigations. And you've recently been involved with some hearings with the Hudson crash.
That's correct. We actually had two of them up there, but the first one, of course, was what's euphemistically called the Miracle on the Hudson. I was the investigator in charge for that one. It occurred about a year and a half ago. And about a month or so ago, we had our final public meeting on it. And so that investigation for us is pretty much closed.
Now, talking a little bit about, you know, they call it the miracle, but there's the huge human factor involved in all of this, and a lot of contributing factors to why something inevitably works out or doesn't. And, of course, on the flip side was last year's the crash in Buffalo with Colgan Airlines.
Yes.
That, again, a series of accumulating human factors, and that went the other direction. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about, from the safety investigator point of view, and you've been doing this a while, what some of these factors, how these contribute to something that works out successfully in an anomalous situation or not successfully in something that's actually even a little bit more routine than, say...
Well, it's an interesting question. Of course, the machines are getting better and better as years go on. The modern airliners today, in a sense, can fly themselves, but they always need human guidance, of course. And that guidance varies. Very frankly, there are lots of airliners out there, big and small, and the experience level of the pilots differs. Their amount of training differs. If you want to compare and contrast the two accidents you mentioned, U.S. Air ditching in the Hudson River, both flight crew members were extremely experienced. The captain had thousands of hours, a lot of time in the military. The first officer, I think he once said he was the most experienced first officer in the world. He had, again, thousands of hours, and he was just transitioning into the A320.
Though sometimes that experience and also the advancing technology with the aircraft can breed complacency, and anomalous situations aren't handled as well because of that. So how...
That's true, and that's a big fear we have. We've had instances where crews have been flying over the ocean, for instance. The aircraft does some kind of an anomalous turn, a couple of degrees or so, and instead of turning back on course, the flight crew... They sit in their seats and talk about it and try to troubleshoot this this little anomaly while the airplane flies farther and farther off course. So that's a small, safe example. It's nothing really bad happens, but it's an example of how you can rely too much on the magic of the airplane.
Now, with the Hudson crash, that was a major airline, while the Buffalo was a regional airline. Are there differences in those airplanes from an operating standpoint that would dictate why one has a more senior, more experienced crew level versus the regionals that has a less, generally speaking, less experienced crew members flying them? Are there differences in those airplanes that would dictate why that is?
You'd think it would almost be backwards. You'd think the less experienced crews should be in the aircraft that take care of them better, but it just doesn't work out like that. There's a hierarchy, a progression that we're all aware of. Most pilots start out flying smaller airplanes, and then if they want to do it professionally, they move up through virtually the size of the aircraft. So, unfortunately, the newer pilots with less experience, perhaps less training overall, start out in aircraft and missions that are, frankly, more difficult than flying across the ocean. You take off and land five or six times a day in and out of the weather like the smaller aircraft do. That's more exposure to things that can go wrong. If you fly from New York to London once a day, well, there's that type of flying, too.
And those transitions from one type of aircraft and one set of company policies to another come with their costs as well, just in terms of transfer and things not being the same place, not working quite the same way. So, you know, how much do you see that contributing to different...
Well, not so much, I don't think. It, you know, the pay scales are there, of course. They're much smaller on the smaller type aircraft.
Just in terms of the aircraft technology, I know you've done a lot with changes in technology, but how does that affect transitioning from one type of technology to another? It might be better, it might be easier to use inevitably, but if you're used to another kind...
That's true. We went through this years ago, and I diverge a bit, but... I learned how to fly with a whole slew of little round gauges in front of me. The new folks, even in the smaller aircraft, now have...
all about the glass cockpit.
Oh, yes, and that's a blessing. You don't have to worry about point-to-point navigation or doing anything in your head, almost. There's a lot of thinking involved.
Dead reckoning and everything
exactly,
else, yeah.
Exactly, but...
Those are good skills to maintain when your equipment fails.
Of course, but
they're... But it's also important to recognize that most of the regional airplanes now these days have all of the same advanced technologies and the glass cockpits as most of the major airlines.
They certainly do. And unless you're on a... Well, I won't go there, but you're entirely correct. The airplanes... The technology has advanced... So now we're worried more and more about the people that fly them. I can't remember the last time we've had a major, or not, well, heck, yes, I can. It's 2001 was the last time I remember a major failure in an aircraft system causing a crash.
Mechanical technology as opposed to the human element.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So nowadays, the tough nut to crack is the human performance.
Catching
end
up
of
with
game.
Ourselves.
I'm afraid so, yeah.
And does the NTSB have any current recommendations on dealing with those factors that you're trying to get implemented? Because what a lot of people don't understand is you guys just make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, in some cases, beg and plead for somebody to actually implement those. Do you have any current ones that you want to highlight right now?
Well, in the human performance end, we have quite a few, and they amount to improvements in training programs for the most part, making sure that there's one level of training for all pilots if we can get to that point.
And that's with operators and company policies as well as, say, FAA regulations that need to.
Yes, unfortunately, when we do an investigation, the FAA is an easy target. They have a huge job, and we admire them, but we also recommend that they make changes all the time. So it's an ongoing process. And
how is that process? I mean, how is that? Are they pretty... reliant upon the NTSB recommendations, or
well, not reliant, but we can look at a situation with a separate set of eyes that they perhaps can't, and we can actually be naive sometimes. We can recommend things that aren't practical today, but might be 10 years down the line. So we recommend things to them, and they say, "Oh, well, we can't afford that now," or "The technology isn't there." But then eventually, we win out for the most part, 85%. 87%.
In the airlines now, there's kind of a move to a new training profile called AQP.
Mm-hmm.
And did you guys have anything to do with pushing for that?
Yes. The acronym was made up by the industry, of course, but the general principles are there. We think one of the most advanced, the biggest advance lately in the entire human performance thing has been FOQA, Flight Operations Quality Assurance Program. Different airlines call it different things, but it amounts to AQP and similar things, and it's working. It really is.
And just a little brief recognition. FOQA is when you take the flight data information off the airplane anonymously, and there's absolutely no punitive things, and you look for any little minor deviations in where you vary from standard. And then part of the AQP training is where you take that information, where you see patterns of people performing things not according to standard, and then you fix and try to fix those things in training with the airline.
Exactly. The airlines don't waste their money on things that are going right, and they emphasize things that need improvement.
And from a lot of airlines are starting to move to that model, and it seems to make a lot more sense than your standard check ride that we've all had in the past.
Exactly. Sitting in front of a computer screen is not as good as focused training.
All right. Well, I'm assuming you're on the grounds here. If somebody wants to come and ask you some questions, where can they find you?
We have a booth in the corner of the Federal Pavilion. It's manned all the time, of course, and we welcome questions from anybody on any topic concerning aviation safety.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
Okay. Thank you.
You've been listening to Robert Benson. He's the Senior Air Safety Investigator with the NTSB.